We're your Sweeties.
Sweeties. Hey everyone, I'm Wah.
And I'm Chris, and welcome to DocuSweeties.
We're two longtime friends who discuss the riveting and sometimes trashy world of reality TV and docuseries.
Yes, but through our own lens, which can be fast, can be slow, can be quality, can be tailored, and can be haphazard and thrown together, but at the end of the day, hopefully mildly sweet. Hi.
Hello. So we are talking Brandy Helville and the cult of fast fashion. You can find this documentary, it's not a docuseries, a documentary on Max. No.
Yes.
Max? Okay, great. Max. For why did I think Netflix? I don't know. Max.
It is Max. Now, I was confused because I thought initially it was Hulu. And then when I went to Hulu, they were like, you can bundle Hulu, ESPN, and Disney for this amount of dollars. And I was like, okay, don't need you. And I looked up Brandy Melville and I realized it was on Max. And then that Hulu site tried to be like, oh, Max? Well, why don't you just add Max on for $9 to watch it? And I was like, bitch, I already have Max because I've been having HBO. So then I had to go to HBO Max, find it, which was easy, and then watch it there. And it's like, and these streamers don't know what to do. But here it is, Brandy Helville, which very fun title, and the cult of fast fashion. Now, this is where the cult part of this title to me, I think, is almost like a little grab baggy in titles. Mm-hmm. And words, keywords to get people to watch, because this is a documentary and we definitely have a lot of documentaries about cults. And this is not that at all. This is just a dumb mall store. So here we are.
It's interesting because I don't necessarily think it was a bad documentary because it did provide me a lot of information that I didn't have. And I will say that you are right that the word cult is misleading because a cult is not what the people who buy fast fashion can be said to be a part of. Honestly, I was woefully unaware. The only person who's ever said fast fashion to me maybe was you, Chris, when you were saying you had said something to me about fast fashion and like the type of clothing that you would like to purchase. And I was like, I didn't quite understand what you were talking about. And I was like, what do you mean fast fashion? Because fast fashion is what clothing is now. Like, unless you're going to maybe a department store or, I don't know, a good department store that's going to have good quality clothing, that's going to be lined, that's going to be made well, you know, things like someone with a merchandiser that isn't a teeny bopper. So it is crazy that most things are. And this reminded me that I remember when Zara hit the scene. I remember my friends who had gone to Europe talking about Zara and being like, oh my God, there's this store called Zara in London. And it has like such cute clothes for a low price. And even when Zara came out, I was like, this is not low price. This is high price, I feel. But the amount of different fashion and trendy things that they had, how many sizes they had it in, how they changed the store over. I mean, I still couldn't get over how they changed the store over so often because I'm like, I just was looking at something a month ago. I wanted to still be here. But yeah, so I didn't realize how I kind of took over how I shop because it came in right as I was becoming an adult shopping. So how could I get away from H&M? How could I get away from Zara? There's also another London brand that I used to shop at in New York City. I cannot remember what it was called.
Congo or something like that. Wasn't that like
a thing? It was like, I want to say it's like H&M, but it's British.
Armani Exchange or like they had like a bunch of, well, that wasn't fast fashion, but yeah, like,
oh, I never
knew it's fast fashion, you know, like.
Yes. And I didn't know that. How are you to know that? I mean, besides you heard the rumors growing up about like the Old Navy sweatshops, but like it's fast fashion is what regular people can afford.
Yeah, this is where it's interesting because a lot of the backlash against kind of like making people feel bad for fast fashion is the idea of, oh, not everyone can go to Neiman Marcus and drop, you know, $1,000 for two pairs of shoes or whatever, you know, or whatever it is. And, you know, I think that growing up, there was always this thing that like when things were done, like back in the day, they were made better and things as we kind of like move through the stages of like the Industrial Revolution and, you know, as things kind of like trickle down from late stage capitalism, do we get products that are, I mean, made for, you know, pennies and made to not last long, just to have them, just to be able to say that you have one. And I think ultimately it's going to require consumers to make informed choices, just like they do or should do with nutrition. You know, it's the same thing to me, kind of, as like the 90s kid like me, like you, who grew up in the 90s eating, well, not you, because you came from an ethnic household, but like, or you, maybe your parents cared about you. What I'm trying to say is a lot of 90s kids or whatever, like, are used to eating like bullshit packaged foods and stuff like that. Like nowadays, like, we wouldn't give our kids that at all. You know, the Lunchables, the Squeeze-It, stuff like that. That obviously, and plus there is fast food, mm-hmm. fast clothes. The mm-hmm. idea that you can get something that it'll be instantaneously delicious or necessary because of how on trend it is or how hungry you are in comparison to how it looks for nothing and get instant pleasure. It's like winning a slot machine, you know, it's just, you get a dopamine hit in such a way that the cycle repeats itself. And wanting to tell someone like, oh no, you should instead save all your dollars and once a year buy yourself a cashmere coat. It'll be with you for the rest of your life, you know, and don't eat out and don't eat all the packaged foods. Why don't you just make a meal plan every day? You make your own beautiful, healthy, organic foods. And yes, you budget so that you don't spend as much. It's like, well, that's really ideal. Would love to do it. We just have to get literally everyone to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And me all the time, 90% of the time.
It's so difficult. So at the end of this documentary, she said something and she said, we just have to buy less. And I was like, that hit me. We just have to buy less. And I was like, okay, I'm going to really try. So we start off with a little note on a black screen that says that the people who are in a current litigation with Brandy Melville, their identities have been hidden and that they're being played by actors. Now, let me tell you, either that is a lie or these actors were really fucking committed. It was so good. And in fact, I was confused as to who were the actors and who weren't.
The Italian guy that's blonde, he's an actor. All the girls that used to work there are not actors.
Not actors. But what do you... Italian blonde?
The Italian guys that are in Cloaked in Darkness are the actors.
Yes, yes. That's... Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I thought you said blonde. I was like,
I thought he had blonde, spiky hair. But again, he's in, I don't know. Like, I'm just seeing, you know, one of them had a young.
I see what you're saying. One of them had a younger demeanor than the older one. Yes, yes. But I forgot that they were actors halfway through it, and then I watched it again, and I was like, oh yeah, these guys are actors. Oscar, give him an award. Give him an award. Mm-hmm. So what we have is these guys that are in black. They are the executives or like store owners that are currently in litigation or, you know, some kind of fight with the folks of Brandy Melville. And they didn't want their face to be shown. However, they said exactly what it is that they did for Brandy Melville. And I was like, well, how do we not know? How are they not going to know who that is then? Who are you trying to protect your identity from? Us? We don't care. Then they have girls who used to work for Brandy Melville. And then, there was a blonde girl, and I don't know her name. Maybe she's Willow. I don't know. I'm not even going to try to guess. I didn't write their names up, but there's a blonde girl. And
I thought she looked like Jamie Lynn Spears. Tall Jamie Lynn Spears.
Oh. So she starts talking about the coveted Brandy necklace. The necklace that had all the stars on it.
Did you know the necklace?
No.
Yeah, neither did I.
Yeah, this Brandy Melville is for like teenage girls in like 2011.
Yeah, of all the fashions they show, maybe there's this one kind of like knit sweater with the American flag that sometimes looks familiar, but like it's all like new. It's funny because one other thing is that there is a lot of images of Newport Beach.
Yeah. Yeah.
a lot, where I was like, oh, Jesus, it was right around my corner. This fucking cult was like taking down 12-year-olds left and right in my woods, honey. I had no idea.
Yeah, it is. It is just, I was not tracking. I was not tracking on Brandy Melville, you guys. Yeah,
but we were Jamie Lynn Spears is Australian. So the people that are asking her the questions are Australian. She starts talking about this Pinterest star necklace that she got with her friends, honey. And she was like, all my friends got it. Me and my fucking seven friends, honey, had these star necklaces. And when we put them on, we were like, you can't tell us nothing. Can't tell us nothing. We run this town. Honey, they were like, this is everything. And then
you're better than you.
We're better than you. We'll always be better than you. Our kids better than you. Mm-hmm. Patooey. And she's like, they start to really, one thing this documentary does well is tell us they tell us that for sure we believe that teenage girls equate self-expression and clothes with their social order and how they feel about themselves. And in turn, they are like intaking what the media is showing them and then either abiding or, you know, riotous rebelling against that through the expression of what they're able to, which is mostly clothes for them, unless they, of course, artists and they're creating art in some way through their hands, whatever, God bless. But it's so interesting because, you know, I think that besides maybe like some of the photographers, we don't actually get to tell any story about like teenage artistry in itself. It just becomes kind of this snake eating its own tail of like feeding kids what you think they want, them telling you what they think is cute, and you just giving them the same thing that they've already come up with. You know, like
I never had a sense of self in my body until I was well into my 20s. So I just bought clothes because they fit. I saw other people wearing them, like, you know, Abercrombie was a thing. So, and then I started working at Hollister and I was the only Black person at Hollister.
Why'd you pick Hollister?
I didn't pick it. My friend Danielle, who I worked with like 5 years prior at a fucking small Starbucks in San Bernardino, I was walking around Century City Mall and I ran into her and I was like, Danny? She was like, wow, I'm the assistant manager of Hollister. She's exactly what Hollister looks like. Blonde, big blue eyes, like really beautiful and peppy. And she was like, come work with me. And so literally she's like, yeah, work with me. And I was like, okay. And I just worked with Danny for 6 months at Hollister. And none of the clothes fit me because my hips were too big. Like it was just like such a weird thing. I never knew how to dress myself. I didn't know how to dress myself, honestly, until I moved to New York City. And it's because I was shamed by a coworker for it. So I had to learn. I learned my body very, very late. And so to see these young girls have such a like, oh my God, this is so cute. And like, I could fit this. And I'm like, oh my God, I was just never a part of that world. I never knew how to dress myself. I just did the best that I could. So like, it's just, you know, such a crazy thing when I think of young girls being able to like identify with who they are through fashion when I couldn't. So we had a lot of influence. They had a lot of influencers talking about Brandy Melville. They were talking about how the clothes were very bland. But it was also pretty girl prints and California Americana. It was very that,
a lot of cropped tops, you know, a lot of form fitting. All their tops are tiny, but very soft because the fabrics are like thin. You know, so like, that's the one they're like, well, some things were soft.
Yeah. Abercrombie had like those really thin, thin tank tops that you had to put something else underneath. And it like, otherwise you'd be just naked basically. So I was like, they all did that.
What Seal was not, did not, didn't, I mean, no, What Seal had horrible quality, you know, like
Charlotte Russe.
The one thing about, okay, so Brandy Melville will get into like why they think the corporate structure was so poorly, but it's weird. It's weird. One thing about this documentary, it's like, this could be anyone and this story could be a 10 times worse.
Yes.
You know, like that's this is horrible to say. It's like Brandy Melville is like, they could make the story of Chanel and it would be like, well, she was, you know, a Holocaust sympathizer, much more than just like whatever dumb memes a bunch of guys are like group texting on a private text.
Oh my God.
It's not saying it's not horrible, but like, this is literally everyone. Like, you know, you can't blame Brandy Helville for fast fashion. They were doing it in contemporary casuals, you know, it's been casually happening. So, yeah, like, they keep showing Fashion Island, Newport Beach. They keep showing Santa Monica. And then he will go on and talk about like Malibu and stuff like that. It's like firmly Southern California. We then also, we start to meet some of the girls. One of the blonde girls, she was just shopping one day, honey. And they were like, let's take a store style pic, you know? And she's like 15. And store style pics are just girls that just walk in like, you're cute. Thanks. You're cute too. Cool. Just go in front of this like wall and pose with your cute self and like, thanks. And so they do. And it's okay, like, really okay. Exciting. It's all this right. Dumbest free thing that makes someone feel, I know, like,
so beautiful.
I like a goddamn model. And so they.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC. Yeah.
Would tell their friends. They would look and see if the Instagram would be popping. Then
and it was. Meet. It was popping. That old bald-headed man with braces really knew how to run that Instagram. That's what we end up finding out. It's like they were really this odd grassroots, because how they got people and hired people was just solely based on the girls influencing and doing the shit themselves, them sending giant boxes and suitcases to different women that they thought fit their brand and was like, here, you can keep all these clothes. Try, if you like any of them, take a picture of yourself in it.
Yeah, like Kaya Gerber.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, I've been in Brandy Melville since I was like 2. I was born in Brandy Melville. One thing about Cindy Crawford is that she loves Brandy Melville, and I've always been in Brandy Melville. Okay, fine. We also meet Kate Taylor, who will be a talking head of the documentary. Now, people might think, boy, does Kate Taylor look familiar? What investigative docuseries did we just watch with that woman? Do you know?
Was it Quiet on Set?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know.
She's absolutely in Quiet on Set. All 25 episodes, including the ones that we haven't done yet. Yes, honey, that Kate Taylor is getting around, honey. I mean, what is she talking about? 90 Day Fiancé? I mean, I don't know. Don't come for our necks, Kate Taylor. I mean,
she's an investigative journalist.
She's what Natalie always wanted to be. I'm a journalist, actor journalist. Yeah, basically, when Kate Taylor comes in, she starts doing some research, and she starts to be like, one thing I started researching about this Brandy Melville thing, and this is when I start researching, is, by the way, it's like firmly 2015 or something like that, is that it has a one-size-fits-all culture, and we're rooted right now in a lot of diversity, honey, yeah. Diversity, like, everything is, the 2015 is like when kind of feel like Victoria's Secret, every kind of aspirational, you know, and exclusive style, whatever retail is under fire for that. And instead, it's about size and inclusivity, and if you can, color inclusivity. So with Skims is one of the reasons why I think like Kim Kardashian had such initial like sales spikes, is because if you're going to make undergarments, thank God that you had the wherewithal to make them in different body colors. Because if you're just using Spanx and you don't fit this color, mm-hmm. you know, like it was a win. And so to then in the middle of that, be like, you know what? One size fits all is actually hilarious.
Yeah. But you know what? You mentioned that it was only very specifically Southern California. And so they had other things in New York City and things like that. But like, that is such a booming business. Like, we all aspire or at some point thought, oh, I wish I could wear that. Now, I never had the hair flipping because that was also a tactic that they love to take pictures of girls like flipping their hair with like long blonde hair. And they even got a young girl, a young photographer by the name of Willow when she was like 15 or 16. Now, this is where it gets interesting. This is very odd behavior for her parents, but she took a picture of her friend in a Brandy Melville shirt. Then the like right-hand man to the entire company emails her and is like, hey, if you want to work together sometime, just let me know. And she's like, who the hell is this? So she reaches out. She sees the name Jesse Longo. And she's like, oh, wow, this is like the VP. And he's like, yeah, if you want to just come down to Santa Monica and like come to our studio. And she's like, okay. So her parents drive her from Orange County to Santa Monica and drop her ass off and just leave her. And I'm like, this is like quite upset. Like, leave her. And then so she goes into this space and she's like, oh my God, this is the Brandy Melville wall, like where people take all their pictures. And she's like, it was the most chaotic and unorganized situation she thought that they would have people in there that were styling, you know, that would be like, hey, here's the outfit I want you to wear. She's like, no, we literally Jesse just grabbed a bunch of stuff off the racks, gave it to us, and we played dress up and tried to take the coolest pictures. And so she was like, yeah, so I was in it from there. Like everyone around these grown ass Italian men is 15, 16, 17. The girls mm-hmm. that they get hired are 15, 16, to the point where maybe this is the cult, to the point where people who worked at Brandy Melville thought of themselves as cooler than the customers.
That part was the most astounding part of the entire docuseries. To me, I was like, oh, are you insane?
I have never thought while working in service that the people that I'm serving should be so lucky to have me next to them.
You know, I'm trying to think. Like,
and I'm happy for them for that because I wish I had felt that at some point.
I hate it. I hated serving. I just like, all you guys think are better than me. I mean, working at a vegan restaurant, I was like, the people here are, the regulars are insane. You're all like, you know, like super intense about how you're eating or whatever. That I think that I'm better than you only because I don't think that I want to live my life like you. But it wasn't like, I was like, working at Real Food Daily, which felt cultish at the time for its own mm-hmm. reasons.
Yeah.
I never felt that I was better than the people in LA for serving them. I definitely always like, oh, you're better than me because you don't
have to work.
Working at a restaurant, not knowing that people are easily doing whatever they're doing on the side. But that's, yeah, I just don't, I'm trying to think. There was just never a time in working retail or serving anyone that I'm like, I'm better than these people. Unfortunately, quite opposite. People always think that they're better than the people that are serving them. And that's where it gets really tricky. And that's why you should always do a service job at some point in your life. Unless you're these people and you think you're better. But one other interesting thing is, yes, we're going to start to realize the ways in which Brandy Melville, although, you know, absolutely aimed toward a Southern California lifestyle, has nothing to do with young California's teeny boppers. Brandy is an American name. Melville is English, about two people that met in Europe and fell in love.
Yeah, I mean, she said it came from a story. Now, another through line through this documentary is that there's a lot of characters pulled out of books. Okay, so Kate Taylor goes to do some investigative journalism, if you will, and she cannot find the CEO of Brandy Melville anyway. And so she has to dig deep. She finds that there's shell companies that own each individual Brandy Melville in the different states, different brick and mortars. And then she sees that that's owned by a Swiss company. So she's like, what? So she does more research and she finally finds a name, Stephen Marchand. And Stephen Marchand's right-hand man, Jesse Longo. Jesse Longo speaks more English than Stephen, and Stephen speaks none. So between them, they are just like, I just imagine them in this, you know, it's a Brandy Melville. Oh, what are you doing? Hey. Like, just like, what are just these Italian men just like, not English speaking, just like in Santa Monica, just wreaking havoc on young girls, have decided that is who their target is. It feels very predatory and weird. Like, how do you even know to go for that demographic? Not little boys, not young, not skater boys.
Like, I mean, you know, yeah, we had this one Italian lady who's like, look, when I first started working here, it was a wholly different thing. Like, our thing was like, we had dumb shirts that had dumb sayings on them. Like, when you're stressed and depressed, just rest. I don't even know. Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. yeah.
And then he goes, Stefan ends up moving to Santa Monica. And I mean, like, soaks it up. Like, there's something about him that feels like he probably just like ran around town thinking that he was just like the hottest shit off and was just like, I'm going to like radiate this lifestyle to the world. And it
he does.
It's the exploitation of the POV of young girls and the exploitation of, you know, the workers that have to make his stupid clothes without him having to actually do anything or pay for people. It's what's starts to become wild is Brandy Hubble's a goddamn dumb store, right? That makes their own fashions for the store, right? As opposed to not a boutique that like has a buyer that buys other people's clothes. You're not gonna be like, oh, here's some aloe and here's some Varley. It's all obviously very dumb stuff. And what they're doing is they are very quickly just copying designs and then making them in factories and getting them out there. But what they're also doing is through social media and through kind of getting these young girls on board, they're letting these girls influence the creative direction of the store and paying them nothing to do so. And then just being able to continue this process, and they make so much money, you know, and it's like they can't even really like give us numbers. But yeah, both these men are aging, balding. Every time they show them, they're in pictures of clothes that are like mismatch. I mean, truck driver clothes, yeah. The kind of clothes that are like at Lake Havasu. I mean, it's like, actually, these Italian men are not, they're definitely rich. Not. They're rich. Oh, they're rich as fuck. They're not dressing in Armani suits.
Yeah.
It's not even Italian like that. It's not even American kind of rich. It's definitely not Ralph Lauren Polo rich. There's no like men Brandy Melville. Well, yeah, they are Lake Havasu wearing freaks. You know, whatever. God bless.
Wearing the whole lake. Just wearing it on their body. No, yeah. But the thing is though, Stefan is like from money. Like his family, that's how he got his startup. Like he, mm-hmm. and so for him to be dressed like that is crazy. Now we start to get more of the commentary from the actors in Shrouded. And he's like, you know, then Stefan, he tell me to go to Canada. And I said, I don't want to go to the Canada. He's like checking the YouTubes to see if what the girls want. It's too cold in Canada. I'm not going. And so he's like, just go to Canada. So he goes to Canada. And then he's like, the Canada shop blew up. Okay. There was one in Vancouver, but then he went to Toronto and it went crazy. Shop owners on Queen Street were pissed that their shops were being blocked from all the people waiting like Mervyn's open to get into Brandy motherfucking Melville.
Including a dumb guy with the big Lacoste crocodile shirt on. Like, I was like, what are you going to buy there, buddy? And is that actual look? Is that a real crocodile? I mean, is that a real?
Did you also hear the way he was like, you know, the girl, the Cyrus Molly, Cyrus Millie, and, you know, she's like Miley Cyrus. And he's like,
Kylie Jenner? Is it Kylie Jenner?
Yeah. He had no idea what their names were.
That's the actor though, right?
Yeah, it's so funny. It's so funny. So then it takes a turn. Then the documentary switches. And this is where I say I don't know if it's a good documentary or not, because I don't know that the tone remains the same. It all of a sudden turns into a different documentary talking about the adverse effects of fast fashion, specifically in Accra, Ghana. Now, we know that there are plenty of places in the world who are affected by, you know, fast fashion with sweatshops and factories in different countries. And there's good factories and there's bad factories in different countries. But we talk about how between the US and Europe, there is 36 billion units of clothing made a year, and 85% of that is just getting discarded. Like after a while, just throw it away. And so there's no systems in place to ensure that the recycling of said clothing is done properly. So right now there are just countries that get paid to take the clothes. And now they have more clothes than they have ever needed. And it's become like a business in that country, but also a pollution to those countries. They believe that around the coast of a certain of Accra is just the whole seafloor is clothing, discarded clothing, because clothing washes up on the shore. They have one of the largest secondhand, open markets, where people just buy bushels of clothing, not knowing what's going to be in each bushel, hoping for some good finds. But the clothes have gotten cheaper and cheaper. And so a lot of times they can't do much with it. But what they do with it is they really do repurpose it and make other clothing and do some like beautiful work in a recycled way. But there are actually activists in the ground on Ghana who are trying to stop this from happening. And when they try to say no to these fast fashion bundles and these big shipping containers, they are penalized by the US government and other governments by having tariffs and taxes and different things put on them because they didn't want to buy the bushels and, you know, things of clothing. And it just is so sad that there are people who I'll never meet around the world who are subject to, I don't know, the choices that I've made. It made me feel so bad. I just had no idea that that was the environmental and human impact to this extra clothes.
Yeah, I agree with you. They call it a brawny wawu, dead man white clothes, dead white man's clothes.
Yeah.
They say some of the clothes are so big they can't even use them. And that's another reason why they have to repurpose them. So, yeah, we start to get, we start to get more this. So one other thing I want to say about that is that there is a foundation called the OR Foundation. So some of the talking heads are from the OR Foundation that will start to talk about the ramifications in Ghana of the fast fashion, including some of the problems that are happening for women who head carry.
Oh yeah, the women who carry the different things on their head to walk around, to transport things. It's the mode of transportation, and I don't remember what they're called. But we all see images of African women that have got baskets and bushels and different things on their heads, and you're like, damn, she's strong. But the fact is that they're carrying like 125 pounds on their head back and forth, like 8 hours a day or however long their work day is, you know, and they've gotten neck issues and scoliosis and all manner of things that are happening to their body because of the work that they do.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back in America, it's all about getting the youngest, tallest, blondest, blue-eyed, skinniest girl to like stand in some cheap shirt and then like take a picture with her hair blowing in the wind. Yeah, it's not popular in Italy because of that, but this US market is really like being, you know, good for them, plus their use again of social media. They start to really, in order to like bring home this Brandy Melville aesthetic, have, which I thought was so interesting, videos like a day in the life of a Brandy Melville employee. And it really does show girls on shift at the store, like obviously filming a video, doing whatever they want, you know. And then from that, there are funny videos of people making fun of Brandy Melville employees, like not wanting to pay attention or work with them, which is kind of how I used to, that used to be like what they would say about Abercrombie, you know. Like I remember Abercrombie would have such, I don't know, like
aloof workers.
Yeah. And the thing, same thing where they were supposed to be all models and like dumb as rocks, but models and just like sit around, really can't do anything for you because they're not like good at any kind of job. These girls that they're hiring for 14 to 50 to basically like do nothing, but they're paying them, you know, whatever, just to be like walking mannequins. This one girl tells a story how she came downstairs, honey, and this girl was Swiffering using a Swiffer wet jet. I love this story so much. With not a pad on it, honey. So she is just taking a, like, you know, like, you know, it would be like a dust, you know, like a dustpan, yeah, and just, yeah, scraping it on the floor. I mean,
it's because they picked, and I hate to say this, it sounds like they literally picked girls who had never even cleaned their own space before.
Yes.
Right? Like, you know, part of his, Stefan's frustration, even though he wanted them, one little part of it is that they weren't as politically astute as he thought they should be. That he was a proud libertarian who didn't want to pay taxes, and he really loved, you know, Ayn Rand, and he would put that book everywhere in his stores and sell them.
That was but
surprising. Like, he hated the fact that these girls were voting, even though they weren't of voting age, voting against their own interests. They're like, your father makes a lot of money. And they would specifically go after girls who are from Malibu, who are from Calabasas, the people who are from certain communities where their families were wealthy enough to where they probably didn't have to work. But them working at Brandy Melville was such an honor that they did. And I'm like, who folded though? Because the truth is who folded the tables?
Yes.
Every shot, the tables looked immaculate. So I don't imagine it was them. I feel like they had one of those stock people come up and fold. And the stock room sounded so lit, Chris, especially the Black girl, because she has in the New York City one. And she was like, stock rooms were all like people of color. And listen, that is the way it is in New York City. You know, it's not like there are people of color in the front too, but the back is for show people of color. I can only imagine how fun it was working in that stock room.
Did Cole Haan have a stock room? Mm-hmm. Did people work there? Mm-hmm. Were they people of color?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so totally. Well, there are people of color in the front too. So don't get me wrong, but there's white people in the front. They ain't no white people in the back. At least in my experience. And if they are, it's like, Johnny, it's Jimmy, you know, the Italian or the Greek guy. It's like Nick or Jimmy, you know, it's that. So, but anyways, yeah, I can only imagine that stock room was lit, because that's where all the Black people were and the Latinos.
I know, it's like, it's interesting because, yeah, she is like, it was fucked up. I didn't get to be in the front. I would just literally watch these people be in the front. And I knew it. And I still didn't care because I was there. And
yeah, she was just like, it was probably fun as fuck. Like, I wouldn't have cared either if it was fun. I wouldn't have cared. Also, and then like when they were like, when they asked the white girls like how they felt about the fact that the stockrooms were all people of color, they were like, yeah, we thought it was weird, but we just kind of side-eyed it. And I'm like, oh, you all do not know what to say. Because that's not the answer.
You're 15. I know. I'm just like, yeah. 14 to 15, their first fucking jobs. I mean, what are they going to say? Like, excuse me, in my experience, my 45 years experience of retail. No, I just, yeah, I know.
Then we find, yeah, but they're pretty privileged. Devastating about Italy. So we find something out devastating about Italy. I don't know. Go ahead.
What is your, about Preto?
Yes, about the fact that Preto, who is the textile juggernaut of the fucking Europe, and that it's not everything that says made in Italy is made with quality. And the way that everybody in this documentary was like, Americans tend to think that because it says, I was like, excuse me, it was in retail and I thought made in Italy was good. So don't make it seem like we're just like dumb Americans who don't know. I was like, how am I to know? How am I to know? And so what it is that we find out that there are companies that have moved to Italy, set up shop, and these companies are funded by Chinese labor, not funded, but Chinese companies moved to Italy, committed human rights crimes with basically having like near slavery situations in some of their factories, and are pumping out cheap ass clothing for Brandy Melville and other designers, cheap ass clothing, and can legitimately put made in Italy. And I'm just like, now shooketh to my core.
I know what you're saying, and I agree. Yes, we know that made in China, usually not the best. Made in Vietnam also happens. And yeah, we believed that from the 90s and below that mm-hmm. Italian goods were leather and mm-hmm. quality, you know, like and
made
mm-hmm. with, you know, a lot of like care. It's interesting because, you know, the made in America is supposed to be like durable, you know, it's supposed to mean that you care about your workers, you know, things are so often, things are not made in America that much anymore, purely because outsourcing them to other countries is obviously way cheaper. And what everyone now does, I mean, from the person you call of customer service, mm-hmm. I read that in New York City right now, there is a Filipino restaurant you can go to where when you walk up, the host is a person in the Philippines in that's working like for $6, you know, an hour or something crazy on a monitor who sits in that person's home all day and is like, whatever, casted into the restaurant in order to be the host and greet and ask, you know, you can ask them questions about the menu in order to have like cheap labor done and get around New York labor laws. I'm just telling you the ways in which people and corporations are saving money by using cheaper labor in smaller and or, you know, countries that are impoverished or working, whatever you're going to say, like lesser social economic than America, is across the board, tech, for fashion, for food, for everything. And so what it requires, unfortunately, is the responsibility of the customer consumer to use their money to vote for the things that they want to see more of in the world. And so that is what is the ultimate responsibility of the consumer, which is to like disengage from media telling you you have to buy certain things and what, to think about why you're feeling that way, to do your research on what you're buying to make sure that it aligns with your own goals in this world. And which that is a lot of responsibility.
It's a lot of responsibility on people who do not have the skill set to even tell you their birth date and what their name is. Like, just she's literally
Swiffering without, she's Swiffering right now, honey. There's nothing on the Swiffer.
I just, yeah, it is just, it's it is just such, it's such a terrible thing to have to put on the consumer. Because it should be the conscience of the company, honestly. But, you know, we don't live in that world. Okay. So it just makes me really, really sad to know. Because here's my thing. Like, how much, I know that payroll is the most expensive thing in any company. But then my question goes, so payroll is more expensive than shipping something from Vietnam? Payroll is more expensive than jet fuel? That is wild. So I'm like, okay, if every year you pay your employees $10 million, if they were homegrown in the, you know, in the US, how much is it to get it from Vietnam? Is it, instead of 10 million, 1 million?
2 cents.
I know that, but 1 million? Because that's a significant difference.
Think so about not know. Paying health care. You're not.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I know. I get you. I just need. Someone needs to put a number on it. Somebody needs to give me a percentage of how much cheaper it is. Is it 50%? Because again, that 10 million to 5 million, that is substantial. But that's wild. So that is just this is wild. It was wild. So then we get a little bit more about Stefan and his libertarian, and he creates an offshoot called John Galt, which is a character from Something Shrugs, which
Atlas
is,
I guess, Shrugged.
Yeah, like, which is Atlas Shrugs, which is like an Ayn Rand book or whatever. And I'm just like, oh shit, this is crazy. Then we find out about the company GroupTex. So for some reason, someone started a company GroupTex. in which Stefan, Jesse, and a few other key players felt it completely necessary to be completely horrible human beings. And they ask one of the masked men, is he anti-Semitic? And the guy's like, I don't know. And I'm like, you could tell he is. He hates everybody. He's fascist. He hates everybody. Like this man is a...
We do see memes, honey, and they're wild, you know? Like
really bad.
9/11 memes. But yeah, it's not... I mean, to me, he hates... Yeah, he hates everyone. There's a 9/11 meme of like, two twins get fucked by Arab dudes and it's the fucking Twin Towers. You know, like that, oh. What? That's like, that's, you know, that happened. Oh. There's, you know, horrible pictures of like emaciated women and like starving them. I mean, there's literally every horrible picture. There's, of course, some people like weird Nazi shit. It's like, he's a weird ginger man, you know, that like, there's got to be some stuff there.
There is, because the whole, then it turned weird. Then he started getting weird. I mean, he's probably always been weird, but then one of the girls starts asking about the pictures, because one of the things that in order to work at Brandy Melville, A, you had to wear Brandy Melville to work, and B, your manager took a picture of you every single day you came into work to send mm-hmm. off to the executives so that they could, I don't know.
I do.
Judge you or get inspiration or whatever. So there's just like an entire culture of every Brandy Melville store sending in pictures of the girls who work there, girls who work there, sending in pictures of them to Stefan every day. And he would go through them. And if he didn't like the way somebody he looked, he would call the store owner and tell them to fire the girl.
Yeah. Like, disorders. They all know they have to like fit into certain, whatever one size fit all jeans. They're like losing their mind. That poor Italian girl who had like cool tats gets fired or whatever. And then when she asks why, they tell her because like she doesn't have the ideal body type. And then other people start thankfully like quitting as well, because obviously it's no one wants to work at Brandy Melville in Italy.
Yeah, that's like, no, really. So then he had like a little thing where he would, every register had a light and he would watch girls on cameras at the register. And if he liked the way that they looked, he would signal the light so that A, they could recruit the girl to work there, and B, take a picture of her. So it was like really disgusting. And it was a lot of like chest photos, you know, because he doesn't have the, it was just like, and pictures of feet. It was just weird, or shoes. But the girls had a lot of control. Not, they felt like they had a lot of control. Like they had the, like, what is that? The learn and development team or whatever, the team that basically went out, they got flued out to China, to Milan. Mm-hmm. And they got to go to the factories and see like dozens and dozens and dozens of samples of clothing. And they would just try on clothes all day and like choose which ones that they really liked and tell him. He would then make a couple of like 200 of it, send it to the Santa Monica store. And if it sold well in the Santa Monica store, reproduce it for all the stores. So these girls got to do this and it was highly coveted. But then there was also a shady side of it, of like the Brandy Melville apartment and the Brandy Melville Ubers. There would be certain girls who would get put up in an apartment in New York City, but the apartment in New York City had like 15 keys, girl. This one girl stayed there and she was there by herself for like the first couple days. And then all of a sudden it was like a revolving doors of young girls, old men. One of the old men like essayed a girl. Like it is wild. Some of the shit that's happened, I think if they had like zoned in on some of that, which, you know, it would have been a different thing, but like that needs to be looked into. These girls are young.
Yeah, she had a visa, that one, so she didn't want to like press any charges. She said that she had got raped by her boss. But yeah, we speak with the mayor of Prado that really like tries to like tell us what's happening there and be like, it's not always bad. Here's some nice guys doing it too and trying to like refurbish or redo the fabric so that they are reusable, mm-hmm. and not just reusable, but actually better and durable for like generations to come. Which that part was interesting. Yeah, the girls that are just like, again, being flown to China and treated like queens, don't know that they are being like asked and tasked to do like creative director jobs that if this was like at a fashion house, they would be like employees that get paid lots of money. But because they're young, they're just like, cool, we get to order room service and bed in this fabulous hotel. This is, you know, and it's just, yeah,
it's, I mean, interesting. That's fabulous too, though. Like, I, you know, good for them.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, after the Ayn Rand thing and the John Galt thing, the John Galt thing or Galt thing is just like an extra store or line of the Brandy Melville-ness. Nothing, we don't know if it like keeps on. But again, it just goes to show that Stefan will insert his own weird things into this brand that he also was the one that had steered towards a certain POV and lifestyle. So when he does things like that, it just seems so awkward, you know. But basically, because the Brandy Melville is using social media and these like trips to China and all that stuff with these girls to like showcase, you know, something, and what they're being given is mundane, dumb things that through the eyes of a mature person, you're like, that's not worthy of anything. Willow, who we remember as being the Newport Beach photographer who had just, honey, she had just taken some hair snapping shots at the Back Bay and got dropped off in that Santa Monica location, was like, yeah, well, you know, I was a photographer for them 4 years. And then they followed me on Instagram. And then suddenly one time they unfollowed me. And when I like talked about it, he was like, who cares about Instagram? And it's like, you do. You're literally, yeah, your whole fucking foundation is built on like the back of it. We go back to Ghana and we really get to see the clothes in the water, as we said, at the beach and like tangled up within each other that they're now like long pieces of, I mean, it looks
like to look at those, blanket.
Yeah, like a worm. I was gonna, like a weighted blanket for sure. Or like seaweed, you know, it looks just, it's, yeah, it's like tentacles. And so they have to try and get to the bottom, unravel them. The thought of what's actually happening at the bottom of the ocean is one thing. And then they actually go to scientists who are measuring levels of the microplastics in the water. And of course, they're high levels. And by the way, that's happening here. I mean, not to the level of what we did for them, but microplastics are already in our waters. Like, I'll be honest, like, I'm wearing gym leggings right now. And these, the style of athletic athleisure wear that we all know in like leggings has microplastics in the fabric. It's why they stretch like they do. And so at the end of the day, when these fabrics go and are tossed into our like environment, they seep into the ground, the earth, the water. And so, yeah, I mean, as human beings, if we are 90% water and all of our water has microplastics, you can really say that, like, right at this point, what are we, like 50% microplastic? We don't even need to be iRobots. Honey, we are already plastic. Mm-hmm. No Kardashians or Kylie Jenner is necessary. Mm-hmm. One small part about this OR foundation, they have the scientist talking. They have like this main white lady that kind of has a lisp talking. They have this nice black lady talking about the heads of the people that, and I couldn't watch the parts of their spines being dislocated. That wasn't for me. I feel so bad for them. That was the worst part though. I couldn't watch it. That was very hard. They talk about one part where I guess Stefan did not like the Newport Beach manager of the Newport Beach location and was like, she's all those piercings. She's going to ruin the store. She's going to hire all these people. And like, she's going to ruin the aesthetic. Fire her. And the Italian word for fire her. It's like casata or whatever it is. I don't know. And the guy's like, for some reason, like, no, this is where I'm putting my foot down. I will not fire this one Newport Beach manager. I'm like dying to know who she is. Again, I'm from Newport Beach. I'm in Newport Beach right now. I'm so close to Fashion Island. Should I scroll over right now at the end of this podcast and like figure it out for you? Maybe I will. That's the update in the Patreon only. Honey, it's an exclusive. So anyway, God bless. The Newport Beach person doesn't get fired. And that's when that guy's like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to sue you. Mm-hmm, you can't be doing this. You can't be doing all these dumb things with a one size fits all. And you can be racist in this group message, or you can be horrible in this group message, but you can't actually like organize and do your company that way. And for some reason, they didn't realize that that's exactly what he was doing until that moment. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It's like the CEO did not care about all the bad press, especially when they got caught plagiarizing other prints and patterns and logos. And he was just like, publicity is, any publicity is good publicity. Now, there is going to be a Brandy Melville at the Grove, or there is one. When I was there, I saw signs for it and I tried to follow the signs, but then I just ended up in like a corner next to a See's Candy. But it looks like it's coming to the Grove. So they're still large and in charge doing the damn thing.
Well, they're not large.
Okay.
One size fits all.
One size fits most. One size fits most, which is so fucking awful.
This Kate Taylor, honey, that from Quiet on Set and now here, she's the one that publishes the article. She publishes the article. Diet Prada picks it up. Great website talking about all the scandal. But besides Diet Prada and her, and obviously the girlies on Instagram, the story's not really picked up. And the reason why is mostly because this is what I think. What has this one person done with this one company that literally couldn't be said about Shine, about Fashion Nova, about all the things that happened, Pretty Little Thing, all the things, you know, all of them. So you can't. I mean, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, he's a nightmare man with horrible ideas, and he has a horrible group task, and he's fucking dumb. But yeah, he just decides that it didn't really happen. And because the fanfare wasn't faring, he was able to just like skirt over it. But then they go, but as you said, yes, they're opening US locations, but they got really big in China. Like, again, only extra small in China, you know what I mean, one size, but they are huge in China. And like, Stefan loves it. You know, he's like, you know what? I thought the Asian people were dumb because I only like white blonde ladies, but turns out they'll get as skinny as I want, and they'll give me the money. So I like them. I can deal with an Asian once in a while. And then that's, you know, that's literally horribly what
he is. Like, yeah. He is so terrible. But then another sad part about it, and there's many, is that many of the girls who worked for Brandy Melville had eating disorders at the time of them working at Brandy Melville. And that many of them like had to just like quit on the spot in order to like make it through. So
there's, yeah. And I know, listen, I'm not super young. It's unfortunate for me, but like, I know that there's like an up, and I know that there was a lot of ED stuff on Tumblr, and they talk about Tumblr a little bit on this, you know, documentary, because Tumblr was the social media of young girls in like 2010s, big deal, you know, like Lana Del Rey, that was all that kind of like vibe. And obviously we're now in the age of TikTok, and when they go to China, they start to show a lot of social media of girls talking about Brandy Melville and trying to get into the Brandy Melville one size and what that means, which is dieting to get into these pants or whatever. And I had read, you know, there is obviously eating disorders affect many different people. But in a lot of, I think, the Asian cultures on social media, girls are already feverishly trying to be like K-pop stars and stuff like that. I had read this article about the dangers of like ED situations in regards to K-pop stars. And there's a lot of them, you know? So, I don't know how you would try and stop people from participating in ED related social media behaviors. But I do know that they have no responsibility on themselves to stop it, because the culture and exclusivity of a one size fits all. And I, you know, does it for them. I wonder if it's so much cheaper.
What? One size fits all?
Yeah.
No, he said that it wasn't necessarily cheaper. It was just the aesthetic that they wanted to go for.
Okay. Well, that's the end of the documentary really for us. I mean, do you have anything else about it?
God, I'm scared. Good and bad at the same time. So now I'm going to try to be more conscious about, I mean, the clothes I got are the clothes I got, but I'll try to keep them for as long as I can.
Yeah. And I guess we'll have to find ways to dispose of them better than what we know, or reuse them, or I don't know, try and thrift. I'm not quite sure, but we're going to figure it out. If you would like, you can follow us on our social medias. And I'll tell you, our social media is not Brandy Melville's social media. Brandy Melville's social media, especially nowadays, are like headless torsos with really wrinkly, thin fabrics. At one point, I looked on and they were showing this girl in this one dumb shirt, honey. And like, on the post, you literally see strings hanging off the shirt. Like, no one is steaming anything on this social media. They don't care. But on our social media, we care. So you can go ahead and follow us. We're at DocuSweeties on Instagram, at DocuSweeties on TikTok, where all the people are, all the young kids. We're not on Tumblr. It's our fault. We're also on X, DocuSweeties 1, and a Facebook podcast group, the DocuSweeties podcast Facebook group. We're also streaming our faces right now if you want to see more than our headless torso. Tell them how.
So you could do so by joining us on patreon.com/DocuSweeties. It's $10 a month. And what you're doing is you're just supporting your girls and ensuring that we're able to pay the people to help us put out this amazing content. So if you would like to do this, you can join us on patreon.com/DocuSweeties, $10 a month. You get some good content, such as a live every first Monday of the month and other goodies that will drop here and there along the way. So if you would like to join us there, please do at patreon.com/DocuSweeties. Otherwise, you guys have a fantastic evening or day, whichever time it is. Okay, bye.
Bye.